Why is it that with sparkling water, I'm always playing guessing games with what flavor I'm drinking? Is it citrus? Is it aluminum can flavored? Not sure. Sparkling ice, though, they really mean flavor. Like in-your-face flavor. Orange mango, black raspberry. Don't even get me started on the strawberry lemonade. Kiwi strawberry slid right into my taste buds' DMs last night and let them know who's boss. No subtleties there and no sugar either. But it does have vitamins and antioxidants. Find sparkling ice at a major grocery store or club retailer near you. Sparkling ice. Anything but subtle.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Hello and welcome to the Movie Podcast. My name is Anthony. Thank you all for joining us for today's episode. As always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Daniel and Shay. How are you guys?
I'm good, man.
Oh, sorry. I didn't. I apologize.
I was ready to go. Like, I was just like, I'm good. Next question.
I'm doing great, too. I'm having my voice is a little gone right now. I won't lie. So I apologize if I don't sound like Shay. I promise you it's not an imposter.
It's not COVID either.
It's also not COVID. Yes.
You've got to make that clear as well. How are you doing, though, Anthony?
I'm doing well. I had a great week. It was a fun, eventful week. Most of it was spent inside. But I cashed up on some books and I watched tons of movies. So I can't wait to when we hit that what were we watching segment of our show. I think I watched like 1,000 movies. Compared to your list.
Oh, well, we removed that segment from our show, though.
What?
Yeah. We saw how many you added this week, and we're like, no, we can't be letting him talk this much.
I know. It's like, Anthony doesn't watch movies. How dare he watch movies? Right?
But it's been a beautiful week, honestly. Like, I've been outside a lot this week, just like in the fresh air and the sun. So I didn't get to watch too much this week, but hopefully I correct that this week because I just miss watching anything, really.
Yeah, no, exactly. Same here.
Oh, cool, man.
As always, you can catch a new episode of the Movie Podcast every Monday across all your favorite podcast services. If you want to be part of the show and give us your comments, suggestions, and corrections, head over to thistimewith.com/talk. Also, don't forget to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. But before we get into the news, let's talk about some announcements. We have our commentary tracks available in our archive, so Game Night, Sicario, Spider-Man, all available for you to listen and enjoy. You can play those movies and listen to us talk about them. We also have episodes on Black Lives Matter, Zack Snyder's Justice League Snyder Cut, coming to HBO in 2021, as well as our interview with Kevin Lima, director of the Goofy movie Tarzan and Enchanted, and much, much more. And we also just came out with probably my favorite episode, The Last of Us Part 2 Spoiler Cast. Came out July 1st, and it was in collaboration with Nate from Geekcentric and Matt from the Untitled Movie Podcast. I actually had so much fun talking about why this game was so fantastic. I'll kind of give it to you guys. How did you feel doing The Last of Us Spoiler Cast?
It was something that we've been wanting to do for a really long time, you know, from even like last year and the beginning of this year. I know we've been talking about it, like after this game comes out. I know we're a movie podcast, but we still want to talk about, you know, how amazingly cinematic and beautifully written The Last of Us Part 2 will be. So I couldn't be happier to do it with Nate and with Matt. You know, they love the game as much as we did. And we had a really long conversation. It's about 2 hours, but it's not a boring one. It's definitely really engaging, if I do say so myself. So definitely, if you're interested in The Last of Us Part 2 at all, if you've beaten the game, if you just want to hear our voices talk about something we love and are passionate about, I definitely recommend checking out that episode. Like Anthony said, it's probably one of my favorite episodes that we've recorded. And I can't thank Matt and Nate enough for joining us last week to record it because it was such a great time. Definitely listen to it.
Yeah, no, exactly the same as you guys. I, in a year right now where movies really haven't been, I guess, making the impression for us, we've had to turn to video games, especially to The Last of Us Part Two. And man, this is a movie on a different level. So if you have any interest in film at all, I'd say this is still something that you should listen to. And maybe if you don't want to go play it, that's fine, but try to find some way where you can watch a stream of it. Hopefully not from a very like loud and annoying streamer. If you can find like a version of it where it's just like,
The game audio.
Just the game audio kind of happening. Yeah, I'd recommend that because you don't want to take away from that experience. So great episode. Absolutely loved it. And I think that if we didn't pay attention to the time, we would have gone for like 4 or 5 hours talking about that game.
Oh, easily. And also, everything that we said about these announcements, they're in our show notes. So if you're listening to us, wherever you're listening to us, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, what have you, on the moon, check your show notes. We're going to have all the links to these episodes there, or head to themoviepodcast.ca to find it on your preferred podcast provider. But everything we talk about today, news included, all within our show notes. So there's a lot of great information there. Also, information on how to follow us on different social media platforms if you want to. So definitely check that out.
Thank you, Daniel. You're welcome. Guys ready?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Let's head into the news. I don't know.
Okay.
That was
okay.
I don't know. I think it went. I couldn't tell.
Like on my end, it sounded like Anthony and I were on beat, and then Shay came in a bit later. But yeah. Also, it just could be how the recording is. So we'll see. We'll have to see it on the. We'll see it on the replay later on. We'll try and get an instant replay.
This time,
for you.
This time I did purposely delay myself because I was like, "Oh, okay." Usually, I feel like we're all so sporadic. Maybe right. If I wait a second more. I mean, yeah. I haven't figured out the mathematics to do this yet, so. When I get the results back from the lab, I'll let you know.
We should just record it, and then Daniel just splice it all together, and we'll just put it in. How about that?
I mean, we've been saying that for quite some time now, and still haven't done it.
March, you know?
Yeah.
We're going to start off with some sad news. This is coming from Craig Evans of Deadline. Carl Reiner dies, pioneering TV comedy writer, film director, father of Rob Reiner, was 98. So Carl Reiner, the comedian, writer, director, actor whose contributions to the development of television comedy are rivaled by few others, died Monday night of natural causes at his home in Beverly Hills. He was 98. Just 3 days before his passing, Reiner, the father of actor and director Rob Reiner, tweeted that now seems his public goodbye. Nothing pleases me more than knowing that I have lived the best life possible by having met and marrying the gifted Stella LaBoste, who partnered with me in bringing Rob, Annie, and Lucas Reiner into this needy and evolving world. Reiner was among the pioneering comedic minds, along with Mel Brooks, Neil Simon, Woody Allen, Larry Gelbart, among others, who in the 1950s co-wrote and appeared on the Sid Caesar's programs, Caesar's Hour, and Your Show of Shows, setting the template for sketch comedy that endures today in Saturday Night Live and late night talk show humor. Reiner created and produced and wrote The Dick Van Dyke Show, which won 5 of the 9 Emmy Awards that Reiner would gather over his career. This is such sad news. I've always known Carl Reiner as, you know, Saul from Ocean's 11 and 12 and so on. And that was my introduction. And I didn't know about his son, who I knew of, but like didn't understand or didn't put the connection between the two that, you know, that was his son, the director, Rob Reiner. But yeah, that was kind of like pretty sad. He did live a long life, 98. That's amazing lifespan. But yeah, super sad. How do you guys feel about Carl's death?
I think I was the same as you where, you know, my introduction to him was pretty much Oceans. And then I don't know why I never made that connection between Rob Reiner and Carl Reiner. Maybe I just didn't do the research myself. I know that he was also in the latter Toy Story films. He played a character named Carl Reinersaurus. So, yeah, I mean, you know, he clearly had a thing for comedy, and Rob Reiner is a phenomenal director and actor too. So you can tell, like, you can tell they work off each other pretty well. So it's definitely a sad loss, but my God, he lived till 98. And I think just a couple of days before he passed, like he posted a picture of him wearing like a Black Lives Matter t-shirt too. So he was an all around good guy. Like you could tell.
Yeah. He's very vocal about, you know, politics and things like that as well too. And just super funny guy. Like by the time we all kind of saw him in Oceans, like he was already a legend at that point, obviously, you know, after like creating like the Dick Van Dyke Show, which back then, like we have to think about TV shows. It's like, TV's only had like two or three channels, maybe. It's like you're either watching ABC, CBS, or like NBC at that point. So TV was such a monumental kind of window into the entertainment world. So everybody who grew up in that generation knew who he was. And for him to live such an amazing life and to have his family, and then obviously give us Rob Reiner as well, who's directed some of my favorite movies. What a life to leave behind, and it's definitely sad, but he has a legacy that's going to live on for a really long time.
Let's move on to our second news story. Academy invites 819 to membership. And this is coming from the Academy Awards press release. The Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Science is extending invitations to join the organization to 819 artists and executives who have distinguished themselves by their contributions to theatrical motion pictures. The 2020 class is 45% women, 36% underrepresented ethnic/racial communities, and 49% international from 68 countries. There are 75 Oscar nominees, including 15 winners and 15 recipients of scientific and technical awards. Those who accept the invitation will be the only additions to the Academy membership in 2020. The 2020 list includes a diverse group of people from all sectors of the industry, from acting to publicity to costume design. Invited actors include Ana de Armas, Brian Tyree Henry, Awkwafina, Matthew Sherry, Zendaya, Florence Pugh, Lakeith Stanfield, Beanie Feldstein, directors such as Lulu Wang, Alma Harrell, Ari Aster, Terrence Davies, and Matthew Vaughn are also on the list. So this is some good news that, again, Academy is opening their membership up and making it much more diverse than it was at least 10 years ago. What do you guys think of these changes in terms of how the classes were represented in this year's picks?
It's great seeing this list. There's a lot of names on here that I love. Obviously, there's 819 new additions, so I didn't go through the full list. But you know, of these names that we kind of have here, it makes sense seeing them. Like when you think of actors and just directors who are kind of really at the forefront of culture today, like it makes sense to see these people. When I see Lulu Wang and Alma Harrell, I'm just like, well, it's great that they're in this membership, but it's like, where was their nominations last year for The Farewell and Honey Boy? Like it's like, and I'm hoping that they get to be like part of the change now that we're seeing the bigger change we're seeing overall at the Academy, where I know that their films weren't recognized, but now they can help recognize films that should have been. And the more people you add, the better. The Academy is still a very large and predominantly old white person kind of club, but these changes are what we need to really start making the Oscars matter.
Mm-hmm. Giving it more of a purpose.
Yeah, purpose and just a better reflection of, I think, culture and society in the year that they take place in, right?
I think it's upsetting that it took this long. Like we've been talking about this for way too long. And I mean, oh my goodness, sorry about that.
Oh, everything. Are you okay?
Door to my house, everything that the people that we're seeing on this list, that it's great. Like these are the people that we want to see representing because they have bolder ideas. They have at least a wider palette and a more open mind. So this is good.
Yeah, I was looking at the names. They're all young actors or even like new actors to films. Ana de Armas, Brian Tyree Henry, Awkwafina. These are people who, they don't have a huge list of movies under their belt. They're not Oscar or nominated yet. But it's good to see that they're allowing this diversity of people into their, into this old white type of membership or group to kind of rejuvenate the awards. Because let's all be honest, the awards are boring and they are also very, what's the word? They're very foreshadowing. If you watch a movie that, you know, comes out in September, you know those movies are always
Those Oscar bait movies, right? Oh, it's Oscar a period piece. It's this. And like when you, but those names that you said, you know, Ana de Armas, Brian Tyree Henry, Awkwafina, like they're all in demand actors. Like when you see their filmography, they don't have a huge list of movies they've been in yet. But when you look at the movies they have coming out, you're just like, holy shit, they're in like four movies this year or five movies next year. They're just very in-demand actors. And it's great seeing that because they're so deserving of it. And I love these actors. So I just want to see them do more.
Yeah. Let's move on to some more news. We have a new video game series coming to the small screen or the big screen. I don't know how it works. But Fallout series from Westworld creators in the works at Amazon. And this is coming from Will Thorne of Variety. Jonathan Nolan and Lisa Joy have set their sights on creating another expansive sci-fi series. The Westworld duo are developing a show at Amazon based on the Fallout video game franchise. Their Kilter Films banner is producing the project, which has a series commitment penalty attached, meaning it would go directly to the series if Amazon execs are on board with the scripts. The Fallout series, which began in 1997 with the original game, is set in a world where the future envisioned by Americans in the late 1940s explodes upon itself through a nuclear war in 2077. With their Amazon project, Nolan and Joy will be looking to bring the harshness of the wasteland set against the previous generation's utopia idea of a better world through nuclear energy to the small screen. The project will look to retain the game's harsh tones, which making sure it is still sprinkled with moments of ironic humor and B-movie nuclear fantasies, which players of the epic franchise know and love. Fallout is one of the greatest game series of all time. Each chapter of this insanely imaginative story has cost us countless hours we could have spent with family and friends. So we're incredibly excited to partner with Todd Howard and the rest of the brilliant lunatics at Bethesda to bring this massive, subversive, darkly funny universe to life with Amazon Studios, said Joy and Nolan in a joint statement. So what do you guys think of Fallout coming to, I guess, the small screen, to the TV, to the series of Amazon?
No, I'm I like Fallout. I haven't really cared too much about the series in recent years just because there's been a lot of hiccups and other kind of controversies surrounding, you know, Fallout 76 and kind of Fallout 4. But I played the hell out of Fallout 3, and it's one of those, I think, game series that is primed for a series. And I think you could, there's a lot of fun stories you could tell in there that would kind of fit within the worlds. The thing is, with it being kind of like a nuclear wasteland with that kind of 50s feeling to it. Thinking I'm talking to her.
Everything's happening today. In our-
I think there's a lot of stories you could tell there. And I'm curious to see how they're going to make it like feel like Fallout other than like that kind of 50s nuclear war type deal, because like Fallout's very intrinsic on like your own experience and you kind of creating your own character and traversing through your own wasteland. So I'm curious if it's going to focus on one character or is it going to be on a settlement and a bunch of different people. So there's a lot of different approaches they could take with it, but I know like you guys are big fans of Westworld, so I'm curious to see what they do with it.
Yeah, I've never really gave Fallout the chance, I guess. Nothing against it. It never fell under my radar. I've definitely watched people play, and I think there's some definitely interesting stories to tell in that area. So when this show, and if this show does come, so I guess we'll just see. I have nothing against it, and I just want to kind of – I'm always down for new media, so let's see what happens.
Well, with all these new video game to TV series appearing, which we have like The Last of Us showing up on HBO, and then now we have Fallout on Amazon, like what video game right now would you say would make probably a really good series, a TV series?
Assassin's Creed.
Hmm.
Would be so dope as a TV series. You know, we have a great episode. That's another great episode you should check out. Video games that we'd want to see as movies. We did that earlier this year in February. That's a phenomenal episode of the show you should check out. But I think Assassin's Creed would be like a perfect kind of adaptation for TV, because I don't think you get enough of that world in a movie. In a show, you could really set up the worlds of like Abstergo and kind of going into the history of these characters and have these different timelines kind of merging. Like, so you have like the past and the present, and you'll have enough time to really dive into that. You know, we spoke about Assassin's Creed before, where, you know, you have a great cast in that movie. You have Michael Fassbender, you have Marion Cotillard, you have Jeremy Irons in it, and they just wasted it. And they're like, yeah, let's spend most of the time of this movie in the present, where it's the most least interesting parts of the game. Let's spend it there, where instead of spending it in the actual past, diving into the ancestors of these characters. So I think Assassin's Creed would be such a dope television series. Now that they have a kind of a connection with Apple and Ubisoft through, you know, Mythic Quest, I'd love for them to partner with like a 10 episode series, not straightly adapting the games, but, you know, diving into another area of history and, you know, sure, tie it into the world of the games, but make it its own thing. And I think it'd be a really cool series. What about you guys? Any others that stick out to you?
I would say for me, probably like Metal Gear, but like Metal Gear doesn't need to be a movie. It could, because it's so big and so expanse that you can't fit all the information and the lore that comes with it in a 2-hour film. And then you have to break it down. Let's say maybe there's 3 films or 4 films.
Right.
But if you do it in a TV series, which are hour long, and you don't have to make it a CG spectacle, you can tell a really like great story with the Metal Gear characters and, you know, the history of those people, because a lot of it is story. It's not like huge explosions. It's a stealth based game. So you can make it more of a stealth based type of TV show.
Definitely. Yeah,
I would love to see a Metal Gear TV series.
I mean, I'm getting the one that I've always wanted, so I'm pretty stoked with The Last of Us, but, I don't know. I'm trying to think of other games that I'd want to see. And I'm thinking like it would be silly and funny to see something like Tony Hawk Pro Skater become like a TV show, because it could be so meta. It could be just so silly to have a show like that, where like these are amazing skateboarders doing tricks that like no one can imagine, and they're grinding off of like school lunch tables, just organized in such a fashion. And I don't know.
Would that be an A24 film or A24 series?
It would be an A24 series. It'd be like one of the first major comedy series besides.
That's funny. Well, they do have the documentary coming out this year too on Pro Skater. So like maybe that will start gaining that interest for making some type of skating series. I mean, a skateboarding like a show based around skateboarding would be dope. That's like prime A24 area for sure. But yeah, episode 46 of the movie podcast is where we talk about video games that we want to see as movies. So if you haven't checked it out yet, listen to it.
Okay, let's move on to some crazy news, especially because it's such a, you know, world-breaking record. Will Smith, Antoine Fuqua thriller, Emancipation lands at Apple. And this is coming from Dave McNeary of Variety. Apple has won the bidding for the thriller Emancipation, starring Will Smith and directed by Antoine Fuqua. Warner Brothers, MGM, Lionsgate, and Universal also made offers on the property starting last week at the Cannes Virtual Market. CAA Media Finance, which arranged the financing for the film, represents U.S. rights at the market. Film Nation Entertainment represents international sales, Emancipation is written by William N. College and created on a runaway slave named Peter who escaped to the Union Army during the Civil War and outwitted bounty hunters over 10 days through the Louisiana swamps, masking his scent with onions. Army photos taken of Peter showing the scars on his back from being whipped were published in 1863 and became known as the Scrooged Back photos, which became a means to illustrate the cruelty of slavery. Production is expected to launch in early 2021. So this movie sold for $120 million to Apple, which is absolutely crazy. This is the largest, the biggest festival movie ever to be sold at a festival. $120 million. That's crazy money. I don't know how much money goes to like Will Smith and Antoine Fuqua, but like that is like, that's a huge win for those two. And Apple is just like clearly has money to spend.
Yeah. Again, another huge win for Apple in this category, right? Like they're purchasing very smartly. You know, I was reading that, they had a connection because, their production companies worked together in the past with Jada on stuff. So like, it makes sense that there's like, I guess a connection there, but you know, Apple was just kind of taking talent from a lot of different studios in the last couple years that we've been talking about. And, you know, this is where those kind of partnerships and that networking comes into play for them, because now they kind of have people from Netflix and Sony and Universal and Warner Brothers joining them, and they'll be able to kind of lean on those connections to reach out to people like Will Smith and get their content on their platform. And I think this is only good news for Apple, obviously, and Apple TV Plus, because, you know, I want to see that service grow. And it just kind of gives more weight to their catalog and to take them as a serious contender as a platform for TV shows and for movies.
Yeah, this is a lot of money, and I usually see Antoine Fuqua partnering with Denzel. So this is a nice little change here. Have they worked before, Fuqua and Will Smith? I can't remember personally, but yeah, I'm down for this. This is gonna be cool. I mean, Will Smith again lately, he's been making some odd choices in movies, or really hasn't had a banger since I don't even know when. So I'm really hoping this is his comeuppance.
Will Smith is a weird dude. I'm starting to realize like he's not the dude that I grew up with, or like I had the perception of growing up. He has an interesting life, and that's just like what I've recently come out in the news with his wife and all that stuff. And we're not like a tabloid, but I feel like he's a weird dude that we don't see. I don't know about you guys, but that's kind of like my like little thing on Will Smith. There's something about that guy, you know, like he's cool and all, but there's something about like his, just I don't know, the weird dude.
Like this stuff with Jaden too in the last couple of years, like Jaden makes banger music now and stuff, but like there was that time where it just like Jaden would just be tweeting just weird ass shit. But It's yeah, no, it's interesting. Yeah, this is the first time Anton and Will have worked together on anything, so we'll probably only get this, I'm assuming, either late next year or 2022, but we shall see.
So here's the thing, $120 million Apple spent on this this movie. They're hoping this is one of their Academy contenders for
sure,
2021. Do you think they overpaid for this film?
Yes, 100%. This is Apple throwing their money at this production, right? I think this is just them having this money to spare and being like, you know what, we want to be the platform they go to. I'm glad it went there. Like, I think it's great, but it's also like, this is just them kind of working their muscles now and flexing their muscles, being like, we have billions upon billions of dollars that we're making every month or every day let's throw some of that into content, and they probably overpaid way more than any other studio is willing to pay. So they want it.
Do you think it will hurt the industry in the long run when technology companies throw large amounts of money to films like this? And my reasoning behind this, I know it sounds weird, like what? No, it can only help them, right? Well, the reasoning is Apple's source of revenue is coming from another stream, while studios, their source of revenue is coming from you watching their movie. So right. Apple has a huge advantage in terms of shelling out money because their revenue is really coming from the technology they build. It's kind of like a cheat in a sense. Well, these, you know, Lionsgate or Warner Brothers, their only source of revenue is movies we watch, which we can't even watch because these theaters are closed and yada yada. So it's kind of like, does it hurt the industry in the long run when you're like, this is a huge like purchase of a movie?
I get what you're saying, and I totally agree. It kind of reminds me of the housing market a little bit. It's like, oh, once one house goes for hire on a street, all the other houses are going to start going for hire, and then all of a sudden you're kind of priced out of even being a contender to buy it. And you know, that could definitely happen with movies. Like once movies start going higher and higher, because now all these technology companies are in it, Amazon, Netflix, Apple, what have you, it's going to become a time where the price of purchasing the rights and distribution rights for movies is going to be so high that other smaller studios can't really compete. But my also thing though is that when you look at all the major studios right now, all of them are also owned by larger conglomerates that are not in just movies. You look at Warner Brothers is owned by AT&T. You have Sony, Columbia Pictures, what have you, is owned by Sony that has their own stream of revenue. Universal is owned by NBC. So like all the other major studios also have their kind of parent companies as well. But I think Apple is the most recognizable one because their branding is kind of consistent throughout all of their products. And now Apple TV, it's all kind of under that umbrella. So they're treating it as it's all under their one company instead of having like parent companies in the background. But yeah, I think it's going to come a time, like you said, Anthony, that these movies, the price for these distribution rights are only going to start going higher and higher. What about you, Shay? What do you think?
Yeah, I think you guys pretty much nailed it there. Like it's exactly like the housing market where before you'd see like, oh my God, the bid for this movie was 30 to 50 million. Now you're seeing these ridiculous numbers. And I think Apple paid a lot of money for a project that, you know, isn't going to be a surefire hit. As you know, I guess uneven Antoine Fuqua's career has been as well, along with lately how Will Smith's been. It's a pretty big gamble, but I mean, I guess they see something here that we don't fully see. So let's hope, because I mean, at the end of the day, Apple's been doing really well with their purchasing, and I mean, I guess we'll see when Greyhound comes out in a few days. How good of a purchase that was, but let's see at this point, they've got the money and they're not taking a loss. So yeah.
And I think they just see it as, you know, yeah, they have, regardless of how good Greyhound is, next week it comes out. Is it? Oh, July 10th. It comes out this week. It's coming out regardless how good it is. They just see it as, hey, we have, a Tom Hanks movie on our platform.
Yeah, they won't even name it. They'll just say, yeah, Tom, we have a Tom Hanks movie. Yeah, watch it.
Tom Hanks movie.
Okay. Even though it's not great.
We'll see. Dude, what if it's the movie of the year?
No, man. Then the trailer should have, like, whoever cut the trailer should be shot. Okay?
Interesting.
That trailer was awful. Okay, let's move on to our last order of business. Guess what, guys? Your Walmart is turning into a drive-in movie theater. So Walmart to turn in parking lots into makeshift drive-in movie theaters. This is this summer. This is coming from Andrew Livcheski of Gizmodo. As movie theaters struggle to reopen and attract patrons again, even while the COVID-19 pandemic rages on, will be facing yet another obstacle to financial recovery this summer as Walmart has revealed plans to turn its parking lots into drive-in movie theaters starting in August. It doesn't matter how much disinfectant is sprayed into a theater or how many seats are removed to ensure social distancing. The thought of sitting in an enclosed room full of people for 2 hours, many of whom are eager to ditch their mandatory masks, isn't exactly appealing. As a result, drive-in theaters are enjoying a surprising renaissance, allowing fans to enjoy the movie-going experience with others while continuing to quarantine themselves in their vehicles. The problem is that movie theaters now far outnumber drive-ins, and those that are still standing and operating are already sold out for months as people are desperate to get out and do anything social right now. Building a new drive-in is expensive and they need lots of land. This isn't often easy to come by in dense suburban areas where they can be most profitable. So it's a smart move by Walmart, as the company already has thousands of sprawling parking lots across the country. Converting them to a drive-in just needs the screen, projector, and the short-range broadcast equipment to deliver the sound to every vehicle. There's no details on what Walmart plans to show at its drive-ins, although the company has created a website that sets early August for their openings. So when I read this, I'm like, this is such a smart move on their part to change their parking lots into makeshift drive-ins, because Walmart parking lots are huge. And this kind of allows other companies to do the same thing to generate revenue for maybe lost revenue for the past couple of months or for the foreseeable future. This is such a smart move on their behalf. Like, it's crazy to think that you might have to go to Walmart to watch a movie, but super, super smart. The only thing is, how do they get the rights? They could buy the rights to movies. They're fucking Walmart. They're like one of the richest companies in the world. God,
Walmart Plus coming soon.
Oh, can you imagine the characters that this will bring to their drive-ins? Because we already know the characters of Walmart, right? So imagine the men at the drive-in.
I think this is gonna. Well, I mean, I don't know if this is official or not, but like in terms of where it's playing, I'm gonna assume only in the United States. Is that the
as of right now? Yes, it's only in the U.S.
Yeah, and on this show before, many times, whenever we've described a movie that not being so good looking, we usually classify it as, this is just like a Walmart bargain bin kind of film. So this doesn't make me go, oh man, I really can't wait to watch a movie in a makeshift drive-in theater. I don't know what problems they're trying to solve here, but it's definitely not the ones that I was looking for.
It's interesting because I'm just like, okay, they'll turn their parking lots. So is this, I'm just trying to think, like, can they even charge for this technically? I'm like, if it's a parking lot, like anybody who's going to Walmart could, like, Walmart closes pretty late. A lot of them are 24/7 in the States. So like, can you just park and watch a movie? Well, are they going to be playing new release movies or whatever movies or just old movies? I know they said that there's more details to come. I think it's cool that they're doing this because obviously, you know, we don't have a lot of drive-in theaters anymore, but, I think just for me, it's not my preferred way to watch movies, especially if they're movies that have already been out, then I'm like, oh, I'll just watch that at home. Or usually I only go to the theaters for movies if it's like an anniversary screening or like a major re-release or if it's playing in IMAX again. But I'm just curious to see how they do this. And I'm curious how the Walmart employees are going to be like, do now Walmart employees like, are they going to be the ones who are like, oh, I'm now zoned to be outside at a drive-in tonight instead of inside the electronics section? I'm like, mm-hmm. just like little things like that. But I'm just curious to see what this looks like.
But like a drive-in, you just drive in. You know, you buy your ticket online, you reserve your numbers parking spot, and you just park in there.
Like, is that how drive-ins are now?
It should. That's not a complicated thing. It's just like, do you have the space to do it? And do you have like the technology to do it?
Right. Because you need a lot of space for drive-in theaters. Like, mm-hmm. you can't park close. Like the screen needs to be really high and really far away. But I don't think, like, at least here in our local drive-in theater, again, I haven't been in a few years, but like I don't think they it's not reserved seating. It's just you go and you find a spot, you find a parking spot, right. And that's it, right? It'd be interesting if it's reserved spots. So
it should be reserved spots. Like, why isn't there a reserved spot? But like, this is just like, let's innovate for them to sustain until every, like, till things change, right? Like, this is what Cineplex should have been doing instead of complaining and then like trying to sue the company that was about to buy them for the same value of their company. But you know what I'm saying? Like, this is like, you innovate and maybe you sustain for the next couple of months till there is, you know, you get better.
Right. And it's just, I think in Cineplex's like defense there though, is that they already had a platform to watch movies at home, and the whole thing with quarantine was for people to stay home. And it's only kind of now that we're seeing drive-ins really taking off more. So I get them not converting right away. Also, I'm just trying to think, like, movie theater parking lots aren't all that big either compared to, I guess, Walmart parking lots. I don't know. I guess, well, especially because, no, like,
that's what I'm saying. Yeah. You work with it.
You find it out. Yeah. Interesting. Like,
to think about, you're going to, you know, you already have to limit the seating in a theater now. So how many cars can you fit in a section of a parking lot? Because theater parking lots, depending on the theater, they could be big, they could be small, they could be stupid, like, you know.
They could be like, big, they could be small, or well, they could be stupid.
They could be really stupid, like the ones where you have to like park and then you got to walk all the way across like 7-10 stores to just get into the theater. We all know what theater that is. I don't know. They're just innovating, which is, it's interesting because it's Walmart and, you know, all they do is sell stuff. They sell product. They don't make movies, and they could actually buy a lot of these rights. I'm pretty sure Christopher Nolan would sell his movie to Walmart to premiere his Tenet. Don't you think?
He would want it?
Yeah, 100%. If he wants to
show his movie, man,
on Fortnite. You know how many people go to Walmart, dude?
Yeah, but he's showing old movies in Fortnite. Yeah. He's not showing Tenet.
He also showed a trailer there, so he's
yeah, but it's a trailer, though. It's not a major movie release, though. That's the thing.
I'm telling you, the Tenet is premiering at Walmart.
Okay, man.
Okay. Shay, what do you think? You think Tenet will premiere at Walmart?
You know what, man? Honestly, I think my comment to everything this year is going to be anything can happen. That's going to be my statement for this year. Like, if you had told me last year that there would be a trailer premiere for a Nolan film in Fortnite, I would have spit in your face and laughed really hard. Well, the spittle would be from laughing really hard. That's why.
I was going to say, man, that's disgusting.
Well, yeah, but that's because releasing a trailer on Fortnite is also disgusting. But here we are.
Oh, my God.
I mean, at the end of the day, like, I don't think, obviously, he would do a Walmart release because that just sounds pretty awful. But at the same time, anything can happen this year. If Kanye West can run for president of the United States, anything can happen this year.
Let's move on to some more headlines. These are some huge headlines that we're going to go through quickly. Clone High reboot coming to MTV from Phil Lord, Chris Miller, and Bill Lawrence. I never watched Clone High. Maybe I'll throw it to you guys. What can you tell me about the reboot?
I loved Clone High as a kid. I used to watch it on what do we have here? Cartoon Network? No. We have Teletoon. Yeah, so I used to watch it on Teletoon a lot. And I mean, as a kid, obviously, I didn't know who Phil Lord and Chris Miller were, but growing up, knowing that they were, you know, the creators of the show is awesome. So to see the show coming back, it was very ahead of its time back then. So I think it's going to be very interesting to see how it is now. And I'm not going to lie, I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, no, it's great to see. And, you know, there were news earlier this week, too, like Beavis and Butthead getting new episodes.
Oh, really?
So people were just like, oh, what other MTV shows? Wink, wink, Clone High. And then they got announced. So it's nice to see that they're doing that. And I'm curious to see what it's going to be, and or if it's going to pick up where it left off, or is it going to go bring a more modern touch to it? Who knows? But I'm excited to see more.
Yeah, they definitely had a bit of a cult following with that show.
Definitely.
Yeah. If you're looking for an extreme Frosty the Snowman, Jason Momoa to voice Frosty the Snowman in a live action pick for Warner Brothers. So yeah, man, this looks interesting. Jason Momoa, is this going to be like the Michael Keaton Frost type of movie where, you know, Michael Keaton, as if you guys remember Frost, was it Frost?
Jack Frost,
where he was a human and then morphed into a snowman and then he melted in the summer and then, but was still alive. Jason Momoa to play Frosty the fucking snowman. What do you guys think?
That's actually the working title for the film too, Frosty the fucking snowman. And I think Warner Bros. Is going to, you know, think about it and be like, okay, you know what? We can't have that in the title. No. I'm not surprised. Jason Momoa has a very distinctive voice and he's got a very like, you know, manly voice. I just don't think anyone cares or needs a Frosty the Snowman movie right now. Like we don't, let's move past these remakes. Like the ones that we've seen 150 million times, maybe they'll do something really unique with it. I don't know. I just, until it comes out, I don't really care. Like it just, it sure. Why not?
My man.
Okay.
Can you see him with guns? He has two, like, you know, AK-47s.
No, man, he just has giant daggers or something.
I don't even see Jason Momoa with guns. Most of the characters he plays are, like, either with, like,
a sword or a staff.
You haven't watched Jason Momoa, the man with the gun.
You missed that. It was a documentary, I think. Yeah, I missed that one.
Yeah, man, that's interesting. Good for Momoa. Cate Blanchett's Lucille Ball biopic among films getting a $40 million California tax credit. So this is great because a Lucille Ball biopic is coming to theaters soon and is going to be played by wonderful and amazing character actress Cate Blanchett. So I actually found this article or this news story on Deadline. I'm like, man, Cate Blanchett would play a perfect Lucille Ball because she's just a perfect actress. She's like one of the greatest actresses out there. And she's such great at turning different characters and making them come to life. I'm like, damn, she's going to win an Academy Award for this for sure.
Oh, yeah. Feels like that. And also Lucille Ball as well was such an important Hollywood figure. You know, she's the reason why like Star Trek went to series. Like she saved it from not happening. And she was like one of the first actors to really kind of start have their own production company and have their own production mm-hmm. banner and really change the way Hollywood works. So she's a pioneer in the industry and I'm excited to see Cate play her in a film.
I did not know that she saved Star Trek. It's an interesting fact.
Yeah. Now you know.
Let's move on to some trailers.
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 So we have four new trailers that came out this week. The first one from David Ayer, the tax collector.
Oh, man.
This is directed by David Ayer. Same gentleman who directed End of Watch and Suicide Squad.
He also wrote Training Day.
Same writer of Training Day.
Directed Fury as well with Brad Pitt. Yeah.
That's a good movie. I like Fury.
Yeah, it is.
Starring Shia LaBeouf, which is great to see Shia LaBeouf in a new movie. The Tax Collector is a crime lord who finds... a tax collector for a crime lord finds a family's safety compromised when his boss's old rival shows up in LA and upends his business. So typical David Ayer type of storyline, East Central or LA or South Central LA, I don't know, East part of LA.
Yeah, South Central LA.
South Central LA. A lot of gritty drug, a lot of like, gangs, tattoos, and kind of coolness with shades. It kind of the poster reminded me of a Sicario type of.
It looked like it was trying to go for
Mexicana,
that
Mexicana. Old.
It's got it's got that like Chicano culture kind of like vibe, you know, like of, I mean, I don't know, is David Ayer Mexican or is he just a white guy? He really loves that culture and that style. When I first saw the trailer, and if you had told me this is not a David Ayer film, I'm like, oh, this is someone trying to make a Training Day, but today, and a really like a low budget version of it. There was so much happening in this trailer. It was so messy. It just kind of felt like it was going everywhere. And I was like, I don't know if I want to watch this.
Yeah. It's like, interesting seeing Shia LaBeouf also do, like, is he trying to do like a Mexican accent in this movie? Is he supposed to be Mexican in this movie?
I don't know.
So I was like, is this offensive? Is this wrong? Why are you doing this, Shia? Because he's literally just like going for it, like full throttle. I was just like, oh,
I know. Okay, some people tweeted to David Ayer about that. They're like, hey, can you clear this up for us? Is Shia LaBeouf playing a Mexican character or a Latino character? And David Ayer was like, you know, like, I've been very fascinated by the Chicano culture, and as a white man who grew up in this area, like, I was like, oh, okay, so wait, he is just a white guy pretending to be not Mexican but like to have that culture, like almost like,
yeah,
just culture baiting itself, like, but I don't know, like
Eminem, yeah, in a sense where, you know, he is not black but he does talk like he's from an urban type of place, right? So it, well, could Eminem, be, like, maybe these are things we're not aware of. Maybe if you did grow up in, yeah, a heavily Mexican area, you might, yeah, have a certain, yeah, dialect or slang that
comes, for sure, from it. Yeah, the same with, like, with us there, with like, yeah, and the same with us, like here in Toronto, it's like, yeah, we have the Toronto man talk that, you, mm-hmm, know, that it's easy to slip into, especially when you're in a group of your friends and everyone's talking like that. It's like, oh, I never knew that I would talk like this, but like, I think it's easy to slip into that, especially when you're surrounded,
I do it all the time,
with a group of friends like that, right? Yeah, so my I'm guy. Interested to see, you know, I'm interested to see how this turns out. This is coming out this year in August, so we won't have to wait long to see it.
No, is it a VOD? Depending,
not that I'm seeing right now. I think it's still a theater release, but it's probably going to be one of those things that in the next couple of weeks we'll see that, oh yeah, it's coming to VOD or it's coming to Walmart drive-ins. Who knows? But it definitely, the poster definitely has the Sicario vibes, right, especially with like the skull and the guns and all that.
We also got a new trailer for Charlize Theron's The Old Guard, which is premiering on Netflix July 10th. Mm-hmm. So a covert team of immortal mercenaries are suddenly exposed and must now fight to keep their identity a secret, just as an unexpected new member is discovered. I saw the first trailer. I didn't see this trailer. I thought it was an interesting storyline because they're mercenaries from all, we'll say, years or points of years, or that are hundreds and thousands of years old. So, and they can't die, and they just kind of form a squad to become almost like hitmen. But yeah, I like Charlize Theron. I think she's great, and when she does action films. What did you guys think of the Old Guard trailer?
Interested. It's still not one of those things that, like, it's like really on my radar right now, but I'm like, sure, let's watch it when it comes out. Let's see.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much same thing as Daniel there. I'm like, oh, okay. I mean, I didn't ask for this, or nor do I really want it, but at this point, give me whatever you got.
You never know. It might be great, right?
Yeah, exactly. It could be good. For sure. It could be good.
We got a trailer for Seth Rogen's An American Pickle, which is based on an immigrant worker at a pickle factory, is accidentally preserved for 100 years and wakes up in a modern day Brooklyn.
Yeah. It's Seth Rogen finally playing Captain America.
Yeah.
I saw this trailer. You know what? It looks really good. Like, it's shot really well. But nah, I don't know.
Well, you're also not a Seth Rogen fan. So, I mean, I guess it wouldn't appeal to you then.
I guess, but like, you can't say to me it's a great, like, this isn't it. You can't say, oh, you know, The Old Guard is a bad movie and American Pickle is going to be great.
Like, no, why?
Fucking no. Guy
like, why not, though? Yeah. Steamed
in pickle juice. Get out of here.
Yeah, but that's
so
that's,
what, man?
Man with this is the guy who made a movie about, you know, our food fucking each other. So, I mean, a movie about a man who's engrossed in a pickle brine and comes back 100 years later isn't too far-fetched for these minds. I mean, these guys have always been, like, super outside of the box thinking when it comes to comedy. And I'd say, like, 9 times out of 10, they hit it. And even when they have their misses, the misses are still somewhat memorable in ways. Like, I look back at movies like The Night Before. It isn't, you know, talked about that much, but people will still be like, yeah, yeah, I saw it. I thought it was funny. So as odd as American Pickle looks, it's on brand for these guys. And it made me laugh, the trailer. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'll definitely watch this when this comes out because it'll probably be really stupid. Maybe I'll get high and I'll watch it. I don't know.
Yeah, Shay laughs at, like, some weird things, man.
Well, you haven't laughed since 1993, so I don't know if that's true. You know.
He laughed when I was born, and that was it. Yeah, no, I like Seth Rogen. I'm excited for this. It's coming to HBO Max, so probably Crave here in Canada.
I hope so.
I hope it's going to be good. Like, I enjoyed it. I like that he's playing the dual roles, and it's just such a ridiculous concept that I'm like, I hope that they could make it work. Because the last Seth Rogen movie that I watched,
it was a long shot.
Was Long Shot, and I loved Long Shot. So yeah, I loved Long Shot, and I hope that I hope this delivers too.
But the Long Shot didn't deliver. It got, like, it didn't do really well. It was like,
it got good reviews though.
Yeah, box office wise, it didn't do well. But you know, comedies.
Yeah, it's not forgettable because we're talking about it now, though. I remember it.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. I thought it was really good.
Seth Rogen, I just don't get it. Like, I just don't get it.
I'm not saying I love Seth Rogen. I'm saying it's love, like, the movie love that he Trump, did.
And then there's people who love Seth Rogen.
No, man.
No, don't say that. Andy, don't put this on the podcast.
Oh my God.
Don't you dare.
Don't disrespect our names on this show.
Don't you put that on me.
We have, and we also have a new trailer for Superman Man of Tomorrow. So this is a DC direct cartoon. I didn't see the trailer. What can you tell me about the storyline, or for those who had seen the trailer, what is this storytelling about Superman?
Shay, did you see this trailer?
I did not.
The art style kind of reminds me of Archer, because it's very, like, kind of like hard lines, and it just visually it looks a little bit like Archer. But basically this is like a younger Superman who's kind of coming into his own. Lobo is in this, as well as like some other monster creature.
Weren't we supposed to get like a Lobo live action film like years ago?
Yeah, and I think Jason Momoa as well too was like courting the role for a little while. Then he got Aquaman, which I prefer too. But he literally is exactly the Lobo character.
Yeah.
No, it looks interesting. I mean, like, I feel like the DC animated movies have been hit and miss for the last few years. I'm hoping this one delivers, because obviously it's been a long time since we've gone up just a purely Superman animated film. So I'm.
Who's doing the voice for him? Do you know?
Yeah.
Darren Criss is doing the voice of Superman. Zachary Quinto is doing the voice of Lex Luthor.
Yeah.
Ryan Hurst is doing the voice for Lobo. And Alexandra Daddario.
Is Lois.
Voice for Lois, yes.
Nice.
Yeah, so it's an interesting cast. Again, it has a very unique art style. Like, if you guys watch the trailer, I think you'll get the Archer vibes from it as well, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it kind of has, like, cel-shading type of feel to it.
Yeah, a very cel-shading kind of look to it. But we shall see. You know, we don't have to wait too long for this to come out. This is supposed to come out in August as well. So I'm hoping that we get it soon. And I hope with these DC animated movies, like, this is just prime content to put on HBO Max. So I'm wondering if they're ever going to transition to HBO Max for them, or they're going to still go the VOD release routes. We'll see, but I'm hoping it is good.
Out this week, we have Greyhound, the Tom Hanks written and directed. No, written.
Just written.
Written. Which is premiering on Apple TV Plus July 10th. Are you guys looking forward to this, or are you just looking forward to watching something with your eyes on the screen?
The latter. Yeah, the latter for sure.
I'd rather watch a ladder. No, I'm kidding. I don't know. Again, I don't know what to expect from this movie. The trailer was not a well-done trailer at all, in our opinions. You could go back and listen to our thoughts on that. But again, it's something to watch. I have Apple TV Plus. I'll give it a shot to see what it's all about, but I'm not holding my breath.
Yeah, like I'm confident by July 10th, I'll forget that this was coming out.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to what we're watching. So why don't you guys start off with your review for Hamilton?
Okay, cool.
I'll just give it to you guys to do that. I didn't watch it. Why don't you guys talk about it, and then we'll go through individually what we watched.
Yeah, Daniel, sure. Do you want to go ahead and start off for us?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Hamilton is it was a huge moment in time of culture and movements. You know, it came out in 2016, and we said that this was a big deal for Disney Plus to get, and it is. You know, I've been seeing across social media right now is people talking about Hamilton and being able to watch it and finally watch it and not have to spend thousands of dollars to watch tickets. Mm-hmm. And you know, the production of the show is obviously incredible. I think you lose something for sure not watching it in person. Mm-hmm. So me watching, you know, I've heard a lot of the music before. There's this, obviously Lin-Manuel Miranda brings such bangers, and he's such a talented writer and mm-hmm. actor and songwriter for the show. And there's so many songs like My Shot that like still stuck in my head.
Yes.
But I think you lose a little bit of the magic not being there, because so much of being at the theater is, you know, being transported and just seeing those performances live and seeing the set design around you. I think this Disney Plus show, movie does a great job of giving you these angles and things like that. But I think it may just be me. I don't know. I think you felt the same way too, Shay, but whenever I'm watching, I guess like a live production on a TV, like it's harder for me to feel as engaged with it. Mm-hmm. But I still think it's so well made. The music's phenomenal. Obviously, the production, the costumes, everything, it's top notch. Definitely watch it on Disney Plus if you're interested in musicals or if you're looking for something new to watch. But I just wish that, you know, whenever the world starts opening up again and Hamilton comes into an area around us there, because it was coming to Toronto as well, or it was this year.
Yeah, it was this year.
Like, I'd love to see it live. I think it literally started and then it stopped.
Yeah. It was right at the cusp of it, basically.
Yeah. So I'm just looking forward to hopefully getting to watch it in person, because I think you gain so much more seeing a presentation like that live. But seeing it on Disney Plus was great. It was nice having it available and having all the angles and everything like that kind of thought about. But I would have loved to see it live.
Yeah, for me, it pretty much same thing as Daniel. It's when you watch a stage play on, I guess, in this, you know, filmed format, because you lose so much of the scenery sometimes, and maybe the camera's over here and there's things happening in the background that you can't see, unfortunately, it kind of takes me out of it a bit. In high school, I was a musical drama geek, so but the thing is, it never translated for me for movies and outside of that. So I was very hesitant to kind of watch this, because everyone hyped the hell out of Hamilton. And I will say I was pleasantly surprised. The music was definitely getting stuck in my head, and I was enjoying what I was seeing. Sometimes, I guess because obviously we're watching a live version of it, I would miss some lines or some dialogue because it's to a live audience. But luckily I had my subtitles on, so I was able to kind of keep up with it. And it was, I don't know why, it was kind of weird at the beginning seeing the Disney logo kind of pop up, because I was like, oh, this is a movie they're doing. Okay, sounds good.
Yeah, like the Disney Studios logo popped up, not even Disney Plus. So it was not like the full-on panning across the castle type thing.
Right, so it seemed like maybe the intention was theater release, you know?
It was supposed to come out next year, right?
Right, yes. Oh, yeah, you're right, it was, yes. And then also, it's very long, so just be prepared for that too. But I'd say definitely give it a watch.
After watching it, do you guys think it would have done well in a theater? Like, do you think people it would have made money?
Easily.
Yeah, I think so. Because again, like, production, I mean, like, when you think about just it making money, like, Disney bought the rights to it. So, like, they're just paying back the money that they bought for the rights. Like, they didn't have to deal with the production costs and all that stuff, right? They're just dealing with the marketing and all that stuff now. So, mm-hmm. I think it would have made some really good money in theaters because, you know, people go out to the movies to watch musicals. I mean, even though Cats did not make a lot of movie money at the box office, it still had those nights where, you know, a bunch of people would go out and watch it. And like the theater crowd is still a big crowd of people that they would go watch it, especially if people can't afford to go see it in a traditional theater. They'll go to the movies to watch it.
Yeah.
Plus,
it's a lot cheaper. I mean, like, if you wanted to go watch Hamilton in theaters, you don't have to worry about scrounging for tickets or hoping it's playing nearby. You just got to go to your local multiplex and pay 10 to 20 bucks. And you can then say, yeah, I've seen Hamilton in theater. And then no one has
follow-up. That's it. It was in a theater. That's all you need to know.
Theater 12.
Very, very smart.
Yeah.
Yeah. What else have you been watching, Shay?
Oh, me. Yeah. This week, I didn't watch much. And I don't know why. I mean, it's post Last of Us now. I needed some time away from it. But I think because I said before that after playing The Last of Us Part Two, going back to films felt a lot more difficult because nothing was satisfying me. But I kind of revisited some old ones and watched a new one. So I watched Superbad just because, you know, I love Seth Rogen. And
on par with The Last of Us in terms of storytelling, for sure.
Basically, it's the same story if you think about it. And it's just, I haven't seen it in a few years, so I kind of want to watch it with, you know, a more grown-up lens, I guess. So I definitely enjoyed it and had a lot of fun. Watched Edge of Tomorrow because I haven't seen it probably around the time of its home release. And boy, does this movie hold up. It's one of my biggest surprises of that year. I just absolutely hate the naming scheme that this film went through. I love the original title of All You Need Is Kill. I thought it was really clever and cool. And, you know, and then Edge of Tomorrow comes out and you're like, okay, kind of sounds like a punk rock band, but let's see what happens. And then when a home release comes out, it's just called Live, Die, Repeat. And I'm like, well, that's really bad.
And I think it was also based off, what was it called, like A Thousand Ways to Die or something like that? Like the
I think the Japanese manga was called All You Need Is Kill, I believe.
It's so many.
But we can take a look into that. And I mean, we know that there's a sequel, you know, planned, and it has an awful name as well. I think it's like Live, Die, Repeat, Repeat or something like that. But
yeah.
But it doesn't take away from the actual film because this movie is really cool, really fun, really wicked. Tom Cruise is not playing the Tom Cruise that you're kind of used to. He does get to that Tom Cruise at the end of the film.
But he definitely runs.
Yeah, in the beginning of the film, he's very like scummy and kind of like you don't kind of trust him. He's almost like a bad guy in a way. And then you end up rooting for the guy. So really good movie. Emily Blunt in it is probably the most badass that you can have seen. And it kind of gave us a taste of if she actually did Black Widow, what it would have been like. So, yeah, absolutely love Edge of Tomorrow. If you haven't seen it or you were hesitant to watch it because the trailers didn't do a great job, I definitely recommend watching it. It's a really good movie. I watched Money Monster, directed by Jodie Foster, starring Julia Roberts and George Clooney. I had never seen this movie, but my girlfriend kept saying, "Oh, let's give it a watch," and we did. And I thought it was decent. I had some issues with it in terms of the narrative storytelling and the characters they kind of chose to portray certain elements, and I guess trying to humanize this terrorist kind of like character. And I felt they tried to do that because he was white. And Jodie Foster, she has some good tense moments in the film, but I don't think she's carrying the movie into the place that she kind of wants to. Plus, George Clooney's character is not likable at all, and that's not George Clooney to me. He's very charismatic, so in some ways, you'll always end up kind of liking him. But in this one, he's very like, I want to punch you in the face. And overall, it took too long to get to the end for me, to get to what the meat and potatoes of the film were. But again, I didn't hate it. I thought, you know, I was satisfied with my time, but I would not say it's a watch it or anything. I'd say if you want to stream it, you're more than welcome to. And Hamilton, of course.
I was in the same boat with Money Monster when I watched it.
Yeah,
it was like meh. I thought it would be better. Like, you had Jodie Foster as your director, Julia Roberts, Clooney, and it just fell flat.
I think,
tell you the truth, Jodie Foster hasn't really made a great film.
No.
But I don't like. Usually, like, if you make a great film, you make a great film. It doesn't take you like 7 films to make a great film. But yeah, I don't know. Sometimes it just like most of her movies always fall flat.
Yeah.
What about you, Dan?
Yeah. Yeah, same for me with Money Monster. It wasn't really a memorable movie for me. I remember watching it a couple years ago, 2016 it came out in. Was it 2016?
I think so, yeah.
2016. And yeah, it didn't really leave a lasting impression with me. I think it was just overly long. And I think, too, when you have a movie that's set in like primarily in one location, you kind of get bored after a while. So,
it's an hour and a half movie, too, which is surprising.
But it feels way longer.
Way longer.
So I'm with you guys on that. This week, though, I watched Hell or High Water, which was one of my favorite movies of 2016. I want to say that came out now, too.
So, yeah,
2016. That is a great movie in 2016 that came out, that literally came out at the Cannes Film Festival with Money Monster. So it's funny that they came out the same day. But yeah, it's a phenomenal movie. Ben Foster, Chris Pine, and Jeff Bridges. Chris Pine probably giving one of his best performances in a movie. Mm-hmm. I don't really think of him as like an actor in terms, not that he's not ever bad, but like,
no.
This I think he just brings such an amazing performance to it. Jeff Bridges as well too, so I definitely recommend watching this movie.
I think sometimes Chris Pine is like typecasted as, oh, he's the pretty boy, but in Hell or High Water he's a pretty boy, but he's also very like rough and gruff too.
Yeah, so it's a phenomenal movie. It's about two brothers who are basically robbing banks, but it's not your typical kind of heist movie. I don't want to get into too much spoilers for it, but I would definitely recommend it. Mm-hmm. Written by Taylor Sheridan, who did Sicario and Wind River and a bunch of movies that we love, so definitely check it out. I checked out Eurovision finally, which is on Netflix. This is Rachel McAdams and Will Ferrell's movie about the world of European pop music. I didn't finish it. I'm about halfway through it. It's interesting so far. It's I feel like it's 2.5 hours long. It's a very long movie. Some interesting music that kind of gets stuck in your head as well too. But it's interesting. I mean, the only option I could really give it is stream it. So if you're a fan of Will Ferrell, give it a shot. It's a very different type of movie that he's done, but it has a lot of Will Ferrell-isms in it as well too. And just at least for the music and the production of the music is interesting. I mentioned Hamilton already, and then like Shay, I was on a George Clooney kick this week, and I decided to put on Up in the Air, which is one of my favorite George Clooney movies ever. I think it's one of his best performed movies as well too,
easily.
And it's just, I think it's just such a well written and well made movie. You have a great cast between George and Vera Farmiga and Anna Kendrick and Jason Bateman. Great cast, great story, heartbreaking story. But it's one of my favorite movies, and I definitely recommend you checking it out as well too.
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
I love Up in the Air. I try to watch it every couple of months if I can. It's just something about it. It's as heartbreaking as a story can get at some points. It's still very light, and it feels really good to watch. And I think it was, was it Jason Reitman that directed it?
Jason Reitman.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's always got a knack for these kind of films that are like Thank You for Smoking, also another great film. But yeah, he's great.
And George Clooney is just so likable in this movie. Unlike Money Monster, even though his job in this movie is literally firing people.
Yeah. It's got some great cameos too. Like, you got J.K. Simmons, you've got Zach Galifianakis.
Yep. You got some great cast. Fun fact for the movie is that a lot of the people that they cut to that they were being fired were actually people who were fired from jobs in real life that they thought they were filming for a documentary. Mm-hmm. And they just put that footage from the quote unquote documentary into the movie because they really wanted people's real reactions. And there's moments where you just really feel heartbroken for these people who just lost their job. And, you know, there's a line that always sticks out where the guy's kind of talking about how he's saying how, like, you know, getting fired, they say, is like having a loved one pass away. But why does it feel like I'm the one who passed away and everyone else at my job is my family? And I was like, oh man, like there's some really like heavy moments in this movie, but it's surprisingly funny and light and upbeat. But it's not afraid to go to darker places. And I really recommend you watching it. It's a great one.
I was going to say before that that movie always has a, the opening sequence for that movie always like connects to me somehow because he goes through all the people that he's about to fire. And it's just like, man, this is tough. This is a tough film.
Already. Yeah. What about you, Anthony? What have you been watching this week?
So I've been watching a lot. I know I mentioned in the beginning of the show, I went on like a watching spree and I, you know, broke the mold of not watching anything. So I started off with Perry Mason, the TV series, the HBO.
The Robert Downey Jr. produced one?
Sure. I didn't even know it was Robert Downey produced. But now that you say it, it kind of makes sense because it kind of has a Robert Downey feel to it. But what a great TV show. It's already at 2 episodes available on Crave. My introduction to Perry Mason was always this white dude who was a lawyer, and he would just, you know, do all these different cases. And this was during the 90s when he would have, there was a Perry Mason TV show. But this version of Perry Mason is completely different than what I've experienced. More gritty, very crime fiction, detective fiction. It's dark. It has everything you want in a story. Great characters, violence, sex, drugs, and Perry Mason himself. So it stars Matthew Reyes as Perry Mason and John Lithgow's in it, as well as Tatiana Maslany. Really, really, really good show. And for me, anything that's like crime fiction or detective fiction set in the 30s in Los Angeles, you got me. So when I put it on for the first time, like, whoa, this is, they're swearing. This is not like what I'm used to in a Perry Mason TV show. Also, he doesn't play a lawyer in this one. He plays like a private eye. So very, very, very good. I encourage you guys to watch it if you have the chance to. If you love like LA Confidential, or if you've played, what's the game? LA Noir?
Yeah. LA Noir, yep.
So it's literally that. You know, the Black Dahlia type of, you know, 30s Hollywood, LA. Great, great, great show. Still watching Snowpiercer, which is on Netflix. I put on Hellboy 2, The Golden Army, because I've never seen it before. I recently just watched the re-envision of Hellboy. And so I thought, okay, well, I might as well watch 2 because, you know, that one wasn't as good as I thought it would be. And 2 was great. I enjoyed 2. It wasn't as good as 1, but it had, you know, it had its points.
Yeah.
Especially the critter scenes where they're being eaten up in the burned out hotel room or burned out house room.
Yeah.
It was really, really cool. I put on Insomnia. Again, this is another film I haven't seen before. This is directed by Christopher Nolan, one of his first films. I think this is his actual second film, starring Al Pacino and Robert Williams. And what's her name?
Hilary Swank.
Man, Al Pacino did such a great performance in terms of not being able to sleep, because the premise of this story is two detectives go to Alaska to solve a murder, and some things happen, and these two detectives they go to Alaska and they realize like it doesn't go dark until like it never goes dark. It just, it's sun. It, at that point of time in the calendar, it's always bright outside. So Al Pacino has a hard time falling asleep. And you can really see Al Pacino, like, he is stressed out. He's dealing with a murder that he can't solve. Personal problems with his partner. And it just shows. And Robin Williams, again, a great, great, great performance. This was, I think the cinematography was done by Wally Pfister.
Yeah, Wally Pfister. Yeah.
Really, really well done cinematography. I encourage you guys to watch it if you have never watched Insomnia. It is probably the most non-Christopher Nolan film because there is no twist or turns like you usually get in his films. And it is more of like the simplest version of all his movies that I've ever watched because it's very straight to the point. There is parts of it which are very, that's an interesting point where there's an interesting part of the story where you wonder, how is he going to get out of this or how is this going to work? But there is no like twists and turns that you normally would see out of a Christopher Nolan film. Have you guys ever watched Insomnia?
Yeah, yeah, love it. Yeah. Great movie. Yeah.
Am I right in terms of saying it's like the least for like the one movie that doesn't feel like a Christopher Nolan movie?
I think like, yeah, other than like the Batman movies that were more straightforward, like Insomnia didn't have a lot of like kind of non-linear storytelling in that aspect. But it definitely has those Nolan-isms in it. Kind of just like having the cutaways of like the blood-soaked clothes and things like that. Also, again, like having it being in Alaska with the backdrop of not being like not being able to sleep, but also him not being able to sleep because of like the crimes that he's committed at a police op, like as a detective, and kind of planting evidence and all that kind of stuff. It's such a great backdrop for this story, and you know Robin Williams is terrifying in this movie. It's a great movie. It's often a forgotten about Nolan movie, but it was his first big studio movie, and you know he really delivered. And that is the film that that Warner Brothers saw. Then they're like, yeah, do you want to do Batman? And the rest is history.
It's interesting because, you know, it's his first big studio film and he landed Al Pacino and Robin Williams and Hilary Swank. Like those are some big actors, especially at that time when they were all really, really doing well. So, I mean, just shows the power of Nolan, I guess. But yeah, you're right. It's usually the forgotten Nolan film. And you know what? It's also not my most watched Nolan film, but every once in a while I think about it and I'm like, oh, maybe I'll watch that again.
Mm-hmm. I put on the Lethal Weapon series. So Lethal Weapon 2, 3, and 4, because I recently watched one. I love Lethal Weapon. I think the chemistry between Mel Gibson and Danny Glover is fantastic. It's like, you watch it and you're like, man, they were so good together. And Mel Gibson could put Tom Cruise's running up on the board because Mel Gibson can run. I don't know if you've ever watched, like when you watch Lethal Weapon and you really look at Mel Gibson running, because we always compare, like no one runs as good as Tom Cruise. But Mel Gibson in all these films, I think instead of, other than Lethal Weapon 4, because he didn't really run in that one, he did really great running scenes. But yeah, man, Lethal Weapon is such a great movie franchise. I hope they make another one, Lethal Weapon 5. I know there were talks in January that, you know, there is a story there to build on, but you know, we don't know now that we're in this pandemic what it looks like. But man, the chemistry between those two, there'll be nothing. I can't find chemistry like that in a movie franchise that lasts that long with two great actors. I don't know. What are your takes on Lethal Weapon? Unless I'm just like really passionate about Lethal Weapon.
You're definitely very passionate about Lethal Weapon. It's not a series that actually that I've properly watched. I've given the first one a half a watch. And again, nothing against it. I maybe it was the wrong time for me to watch it. I've only heard good things. I do own them, so definitely the incentive is there to watch them. But I haven't given it the love or the respect that it deserves yet. The only Lethal Weapon that I've seen right now is on It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, because I think those ones are phenomenal.
Right.
Yeah, no, Lethal Weapons are really fun movies. Great action, great chemistry. Just really funny as well, too. And it makes sense because, like, Shane Black was involved in writing them as well, too.
Creating characters, yeah.
And creating the characters. So there's a lot of great dark humor there as well, too. And it's no coincidence that they've had such a long-lasting impression in, I guess, movies. Because, like, when you think of buddy cop movies, you always kind of go back to those type of movies.
Right. I put on War of the Worlds, starring Tom Cruise. I haven't seen this in a long time, and I was up for some interesting stories and aliens and explosions. So I put on War of the Worlds, which is, it's funny because it's, you know, at the end, the aliens couldn't sustain our bacteria. That's why they died, right? It's just, you know, the world that we're living in right now, it's like those aliens are not coming to our planet. But yes, great. Like, Spielberg did such a great job of throwing you into this world where, you know, here's Tom Cruise, you know, ordinary dude, working man, doesn't have a great relationship with his family, is now put in a predicament where he has to take care of his family when he really didn't do that well in the beginning when the world wasn't ending. He's dealing with a son who wants to join the army. He's dealing with his daughter who's like freaking out because she doesn't know what the hell is happening and the world's like literally on its end. And Tom Cruise did such a great role of just playing this guy who's like doing everything he can possibly do to shield them and protect them and get them to their mother and just be the father and then grow into the father that he should have been, I guess, in the beginning of this film. But it was, I think, one of Tom Cruise's best performances because it was so opposite of what he doesn't play the hero. He doesn't solve the issue. He's just trying to survive. And it's like, man, he would do well in a, like some sort of Last of Us type of scenario or zombie scenario where, you know, he has to kind of survive the apocalypse of sorts. So that was that. I put on The Thing because I've never watched The Thing. Man, another interesting film. You might have seen sequences from The Thing, which is a horror movie based on an alien that arrives on Earth and starts to clone its humans and takes over their, like, their identity. And you don't know who is, you know, who is real and who is not. And it creates like this, holy shit. Like, I can't be in this compound with people I don't know. And it creates paranoia and what is it called? The practical effects that they used for The Thing, fantastic. We're talking about a film that came out in 1982, directed by John Carpenter. Really, really well done. Kurt Russell is in it. T.K. Carter is in it. Keith David is also in it. It plays a young
iconic character. Poster as well, too. Like, the poster iconic, of it is, yeah. Like, is such an iconic one.
But if you just YouTube The Thing, like, movie sequences, you'll see, like, the visual effects that they used, all like puppeteering and they use a certain term for it,
like animatronics,
yeah, that they used in 1982. Really, really well done.
Yeah, and I think it's Sam Winston Studio that did it, who did the,
it looks like something Sam Winston would do. Like, I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah. I don't know who particular, but yeah, it was a great horror film. Really did, because it just creates this paranoia because this alien, again, he takes over your body and he lives inside you, and you know, he can infest you by just one small little particle, very similar to, you know, COVID-19.
Oh, like, gosh.
One little thing can then grow in your body, and then you are not in control anymore.
Yeah. So yeah, Stan Winston did do the, he was part of the thing. And that was one of the first movies that he did that really kind of got him on the map of Hollywood to then do Terminator, Batman, Jurassic Park, Iron Man, all those movies. So
yeah,
if you guys don't know who Stan Winston is, look him up because he has done so much work for Hollywood.
I think we talked about him last week's episode, I believe.
Did we?
We did. We did mention Stan Winston not too long ago, maybe at least an episode or two ago.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah.
I don't remember. I put on, so after I watched The Thing, I put A Time to Kill, starring Matthew McConaughey, Samuel L. Jackson, and Sandra Bullock. And then I watched Mississippi Burning, which stars.
It's interesting William Dafoe. It's interesting you watch that.
I know. So here's the thing. I wanted to watch A Time to Kill because we were talking about it recently, where I think
we keep quoting it.
And I put in a gift that said, you know, yes, it deserved to die because they, and I hope they burn in hell. And I'm like, man, that was such a great movie. And that there's, even though it's a really fucking sad story and it's like literally awful, there is a part of me that's a movie that I remember watching in the 90s and I needed to watch it again. And it's just fitting that it's happening now with all the things that are Black Lives Matter and all that. But another really well done film. And I also, it's a movie done by Joel Schumacher.
Yeah.
Which is completely opposite of what you think Joel Schumacher would direct.
Yeah. Yeah. We were talking about it last week when we were, you know, talking about how he passed away, we were talking about A Time to Kill.
Yeah.
And then it's funny, I was literally last week, I told you, Shay, I'm like, yeah, Shay, you should check out the movie Mississippi Burning. Like, it used to scare me growing up watching that movie.
Yeah, these are all been brought up in the last couple of weeks, for sure.
Mississippi Burning is another phenomenal movie, you know, Willem Dafoe, a very young Willem Dafoe and Gene Hackman. Yeah. It's a great film.
And Mississippi Burning came out in 1988, nominated for quite a bit of the Academy Awards, didn't win that much. But again, it's you know, telling the story of the South and how racism lives there, and you know, growing up and how this, like, they, what Mississippi Burning did really well is they would have like these scenes in the film where they're talking to local folks, and you know, the racism is so blatant. It's like, no, this is normal for us. This is how it works down here, and that's what the underlining factor was, like, you don't live in Mississippi. You don't know what it's like to be in Mississippi. This is how it is. Everyone around us, it's like their own country. This is how we deal with racism and how we deal with bigotry. And it was an interesting, those two movies are very interesting. It brings you into the mindset of what it looks like to be in the South like that during those times. Because I think Mississippi Burning takes place in the 60s, but A Time to Kill takes place in the 90s, like modern time. Yeah. But yeah, that's what I kind of watched. So I encourage you to watch all those films that I've watched.
Sounds good, man.
If you don't want to be cool, you watch Hamilton. Like these.
Wow. You mean like the rest of the planet did this week?
Yeah. Do you want to be a follower or do you want to be...
What?
A shepherd.
Okay. Let's get into trivia.
Trivia time. Dun, 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 dun. Okay, so which cowboy? No, this one is a really good one. This was based on the news that we talked about today. Before the acquisition of Will Smith's Emancipation by Apple, who held the record for the largest film festival deal ever? Was it A, Birth of a Nation, B, Little Miss Sunshine, C, Palm Spring, or D, Mudbound?
I'm going to go with Palm Springs.
I'm going to go with Palm Springs as well.
You guys are correct. Palm Springs was the biggest film festival deal ever until... Emancipation was bought by Apple. It was purchased for $17,500,069 at the Sundance Film Festival back in January.
Yeah, and they literally only beat it by 69 cents.
And they only beat it by 69 cents. Birth of a Nation was the leader before that, which was bought for $17,500,000. And it says a lot because, man, Palm Springs was $17,500,000.69, and Emancipation was $120 million. It's like, holy shit, how many times is that over the cost of, you know, buying a film at the film festival? So great job, guys. Did you guys find that, was that an easy question or a hard question?
It was easy because we've spoken about it so much the last few weeks.
Yeah, I did, but I didn't know you guys would actually like research it. Mudbound really came close.
Yeah, I remember Mudbound.
16 or 15 million. But yeah, I didn't think you read a lot about it in the sense that you tried to figure out who was there beforehand. but that has been the Movie Podcast. Again, you can catch a brand new episode every single week. And if you want to be part of the show and ask us some questions or give us some suggestions or just correct our mistakes, head over to thistimewith.com/talk. That was This Time with the Movie Podcast.
And we'll see you next. Mm-hmm.